This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents The Water Knife, written by Paolo Bacigalupi, narrated by Almarie Guerra. Chapter 1. There were stories in sweat. The sweat of a woman bent double in an onion field, working 14 hours under the hot sun, was different from the sweat of a man as he approached a checkpoint in Mexico, praying to La Santa Muerte that the federales weren't on the payroll of the enemies he was fleeing. The sweat of a 10-year-old boy staring into the barrel of a 6-sour was different from the sweat of a woman struggling across the desert and praying to the Virgin that a water cache was going to turn out to be exactly where her coyote's map told her it would be. Sweat was a body's history, compressed into jewels, beaded on the brow, staining shirts with salt. It told you everything about how a person had ended up in the right place at the wrong time, and whether they would survive another day. To Angel Velasquez, perched high above Cypress One's central bore and watching Charles Braxton as he lumbered up the Cascade Trail, the sweat on a lawyer's brow said that some people weren't near as important as they liked to think. Braxton might strut in his offices and scream at his secretaries. He might stalk courtrooms like an axe murderer hunting new victims. But no matter how much swagger the lawyer carried, at the end of the day, Catherine Case owned his ass. And when Catherine Case told you to get something done quick, you didn't just run, pendejo. You ran until your heart gave out and there wasn't no running left. Braxton ducked under ferns and stumbled past banyan-climbing vines, following the slow rise of the trail as it wound around the cooling bore. He shoved through groups of tourists posing for selfies before the braided waterfalls and hanging gardens that spilled down the arcology's levels. He kept on, flushed and dogged. Joggers zipped past him in shorts and tank tops, their ears flooded with music and the thud of their healthy hearts. You could learn a lot from a man's sweat. Braxton's sweat meant he still had fear, and to Angel, that meant he was still reliable. Braxton spied Angel perched on the bridge where it arced across the wide expanse of the central bore. He waved tiredly, motioning Angel to come down and join him. Angel waved back from above, smiling, pretending not to understand. "Come down," Braxton called up. Angel smiled and waved again. The lawyer slumped, defeated, and set himself to the final assault on Angel's airy. Angel leaned against the rail, enjoying the view. Sunlight filtered down from above, dappling bamboo and rain trees, illuminating tropical birds and casting pocket mirror flashes on mossy koi ponds. Far below, people were smaller than ants. Not really people at all. More just the shapes of tourists and residents and casino workers, as in the biotech's development models of Cypress One. Scale model people sipping scale model lattes on scale model coffee shop terraces. Scale model kids chasing butterflies on the nature trails, while scale model gamblers split and double down at the scale model blackjack tables in the deep grottos of the casinos. Braxton came lumbering onto the bridge.
"Why didn't you come down?" he gasped. "I told you to come down."
He dropped his briefcase on the boards and sagged against the rail. "What you got for me?" Angel asked.
"Papers," Braxton wheezed. "Carver City. We just got the judge's decision."
He waved an exhausted hand at the briefcase.
"We crushed them."
"And?" Braxton tried to say more, but couldn't get the words out. His face was puffy and flushed. Angel wondered if he was about to have a heart attack, then tried to decide how much he would care if he did. The first time Angel met Braxton had been in the lawyer's offices in the headquarters of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. The man had a floor-to-ceiling view of Carson Creek, Cypress One's fly-fishing river, where it cascaded through various levels of the arcology before being pumped back to the top of the system to run through a new cleaning cycle. A big, expensive overlook onto rainbow trout and water infrastructure, and a good reminder of why Braxton filed his lawsuits on SNWA's behalf. Braxton had been lording over his three assistants,
all coincidentally svelte girls hooked straight from law school with promises of permanent residence permits in Cyprus,
and he'd talked to Angel like an afterthought. Just another one of Catherine Case's pit bulls that he tolerated for as long as Angel kept leaving other, bigger dogs dead in his wake. Angel, in turn, had spent the meeting trying to figure out how a man like Braxton had gotten so large. People outside Cyprus didn't fatten up like Braxton did. In all Angel's early life, he'd never seen a creature quite like Braxton, and he found himself fascinated, admiring the fleshy raiment of a man who knew himself secure. If the end of the world came like Catherine Case said it would, Angel thought Braxton would make good eating. And that, in turn, made it easier to let the Ivy League pendejo live when he wrinkled his nose at Angel's gang tattoos and the knife scar that scored his face and throat. Times, they do change, Angel thought as he watched the sweat drip from Braxton's nose. Carver City lost an appeal, Braxton gasped finally. Judges were going to rule this morning, but we got the courtrooms double booked. Got the whole ruling delayed until end of business. Carver City will be running like crazy to file a new appeal. He picked up his briefcase and popped it open. They aren't going to make it. He handed over a sheaf of laser hologram documents. These are your injunctions. You've got until the courts open tomorrow to enforce our legal rights. Once Carver City files an appeal, it's a different story. Then you're looking at civil liabilities, minimally. But until courts open tomorrow, you're just defending the private property rights of the citizens of the great state of Nevada. Angel started going through the documents. This all of it? Everything you need, as long as you seal the deal tonight. Once business opens tomorrow, it's back to courtroom delays and he said, she said. And you'll have done a lot of sweating for nothing. Braxton jabbed a thick finger at Angel. That better not happen. Angel laughed at the implied threat. I already got my housing permits, cabrón. Go frighten your secretaries. Just because your case is pet doesn't mean I can't make your life miserable. Angel didn't look up from the injunctions. Just because your case is dog don't mean I can't toss you off this bridge. The seals and stamps on the injunctions all looked like they were in order. What have you got on Case that makes you so untouchable? Braxton asked. She trusts me. Braxton laughed, disbelieving, as Angel put the injunctions back in order. Angel said, people like you write everything down because you know everyone's a liar. It's how you lawyers do. He slapped Braxton in the chest with the legal documents, grinning. And that's why Case trusts me and treats you like a dog. You're the one who writes things down. He left Braxton glaring at him from the bridge. As Angel made his way down the Cascade Trail, he pulled out a cell and dialed. Catherine Case answered on the first ring, clipped and formal. This is Case. Angel could imagine her. Queen of the Colorado, leaning over her desk with maps of the state of Nevada and the Colorado River Basin floor to ceiling on the walls around her, her domain laid out in real-time data feeds, the veins of every tributary blinking red, amber, or green, indicating stream flow in cubic feet per second. Numbers flickering over the various catchment basins of the Rocky Mountains, red, amber, green, monitoring how much snow cover remained and variation off the norm as it melted. Other numbers, displaying the depths of reservoirs and dams, from the Blue Mesa Dam on the Gunnison, to the Navajo Dam on the San Juan, to the Flaming Gorge Dam on the Green. Over it all, emergency purchase prices on streamflows and futures offers scrolled via NASDAQ. Available open market purchase options if she needed to recharge the depth in Lake Mead. The unforgiving numbers that ruled her world as relentlessly as she ruled Angel's and Braxton's. Just talk to your favorite lawyer, Angel said. Please tell me you didn't antagonize him again. That pendejo is a piece of work.
You're not so easy either. You have everything you need?
Well, Braxton gave me a lot of dead trees, that's for sure.
He hefted the sheaf of legal documents.
Didn't know so much paper still existed.
We like to make sure we're all on the same page,
Kay said dryly.
Same 50 or 60 pages, more like.
Case laughed.
It's the first rule of bureaucracy. Any message worth sending is worth sending in triplicate.
Angel exited the Cascade Trail, winding down toward where elevator banks would whisk him to central parking.
Figure we should be up in about an hour, he said. I'll be monitoring.
This is a milk run, boss.
Braxton's papers here got about 100 different signatures say I can do anything I want. This is old school cease and desist. Camel Corps could do this one on their own, I bet. Glorified FedEx is what this is.
No.
Case's voice hardened.
10 years of back and forth in the courts is what this is, and I want it finished. For good, this time. I'm tired of giving away Cypress housing permits to some judge's nephew just so we can keep appealing for something that's ours by right.
No worries. When we're done, Carver City will know what hit them.
Good. Let me know when it's finished.
She clicked off. Angel caught an express elevator as it was closing. He stepped to the glass as the elevator began its plunge. It accelerated, plummeting down through levels of the arcology. People blurred past, mothers pushing double strollers, hourly girlfriends clinging to the arms of weekend boyfriends, tourists from all over the world snapping pics and messaging home that they had seen the hanging gardens of Las Vegas, ferns and waterfalls and coffee shops. Down on the entertainment floors, the dealers would be changing shifts. In the hotels, the 24-hour party people would be waking up and taking their first shots of vodka, spraying glitter on their skin. Maids and waiters and busboys and cooks and maintenance staff would all be hard at work, striving to keep their jobs, fighting to keep their Cypress housing permits.
You're all here because of me, Angel thought. Without me, you'd all be little tumbleweeds, little bone and paper skin bodies. No dice to throw, no hookers to buy, no strollers to push, no drinks at your elbow, no work to do. Without me, you're nothing.
The elevator hit bottom with a soft chime. Its doors opened to Angel's Tesla, waiting with the valet. Half an hour later, he was striding across the boiling tarmac of Mulroy Air Base, heat waves rippling off the asphalt and the sun setting bloody over the Spring Mountains. 120 degrees, and the sun only finally finishing the job. The floodlights of the base were coming on, adding to the burn.
You got our papers?
Reyes shouted over the whine of Apaches.
Feds love our desert asses.
Angel held up the documents.
For the next 14 hours, anyway.
Reyes barely smiled in response, just turned and started initiating launch orders. Colonel Reyes was a big black man who'd been a recon marine in Syria and Venezuela before moving into hot work in the Sahel and then Chihuahua, before finally dropping into his current plush job with the Nevada Guardies. State of Nevada paid better, he said. Reyes waved Angel aboard the command chopper. Around them, attack helicopters were spinning up, burning synthetic fuel by the barrel. Nevada National Guard, a.k.a. Camel Corps, a.k.a. those fucking Vegas Guardies, depending on who had just had a Hades missile sheaf fired up their asses, all of them gearing up to inflict the will of Catherine Case upon their enemies. One of the Guardies tossed Angel a flak jacket. Angel shrugged into Kevlar as Reyes settled into the command seat and started issuing orders. Angel plugged military glass and an earbud into the chopper's comms so he could listen to the chatter. Their gunship lurched skyward. A pilot's eye data feed spilled into Angel's vision, the graffiti of war coloring Las Vegas with bright, hungry tags. Target calculations, relevant structures, friend-foe markings, Hades missile loads, and 50 cal belly gun ammo info, fuel warnings, heat signals on the ground.
98.6. Human beings, some of the coolest things out there, each one tagged, not a single one knowing it. One of the guardies was making sure Angel was strapped in tight. Angel grinned as the lady checked his straps. Dark skin and black hair and eyes like coal. He picked her name off a tag. Gupta.
Think I know how to strap myself in, right?
He shouted over the rotor noise.
Used to do this work too.
Gupta didn't even smile.
Miss Case's orders. We'd look pretty stupid if we pancaked and you didn't walk away just because you didn't tighten your seatbelt.
If we pancake, none of us is walking away.
But she ignored him and did her check anyway. Reyes and the Camel Corps were thorough.
They had their own elegant rituals, designed over time and polished to a high shine.
Gupta said something into her comm, then strapped into her own seat behind the screen for the chopper's belly gun.
Angel's stomach lurched as their gunship angled around, joining a formation of other airborne predators.
Status updates rolled across his military glass, brighter than Vegas nightscape. SNWA 6602, away. SNWA 6608, away. SNWA 6606, away. More call signs and numbers scrolled past. Digital confirmation of the nearly invisible locust swarm filling the blackening sky and now streaming south.
Over the comm, Reyes's voice crackled.
Commence Operation Honeypool.
Angel laughed.
Who came up with that one?
Like it?
I like mead.
Don't we all?
And then they were hurtling south, toward the mead in question. 26 million acre-feet of water storage at inception, now less than half of that thanks to Big Daddy Drought. An optimistic lake created during an optimistic time, whittled now and filling with silt besides. A lifeline, always threatened and always vulnerable, always on the verge of sinking below intake number 3, the critical IV drip that kept the heart of Las Vegas pumping. Below them, the lights of Vegas Central unspooled. Casino neon and cypress arcologies. Hotels and balconies. Domes and condensation-misted vertical farms, leafy with hydroponic greenery and blazing with full-spectrum illumination. Geometries of light sprawling across the desert floor, all of them overlaid with the electronic graffiti of Camel Corps' combat language. Billboard promises of shows and parties and drinks and money filtered through military glass and became attack and entry points. Close-packed urban canyons designed to funnel desert winds became sniper alleys. Iridescent photovoltaic paint roofs became drop zones. The cypress arcologies became high ground advantage and priority attack zones, thanks to the way they dominated the Vegas skyline and loomed over everything else. Bigger and more ambitious than all of Sin City's previous forays into the fantastical combined. Vegas ended in a sharp black line. The combat software started picking out living creatures, cool spots in the dark heat of millennial suburban skeleton.
Square mile after square mile of buildings that weren't good for anything except firewood and copper wiring, because Catherine Case had decided they didn't deserve their water anymore.
Sparse and lonely campfires perforated the blackness. Beacons marking the locations of desiccated Texans and zoners who didn't have enough money to get into a cypress arcology and had nowhere else to flee. The Queen of the Colorado had slaughtered the hell out of these neighborhoods, her first graveyards, created in seconds when she shut off the water in their pipes.
If they can't police their damn water mains, they can drink dust, Case had said.
People still sent the lady death threats about that. The helicopters crossed the last of the wrecked suburban buffer zone and passed out into open desert. Original landscape. Old Testament ancient. Creosote bushes, Joshua trees, spiky and lonely. Yucca eruptions, dry washes, pale gravel sands,
quartz pebbles. The desert was entirely black now and cooling, the scalpel scrape of the sun finally off the land. There'd be animals down there, nearly hairless coyotes, lizards and snakes, owls, a whole world that only came alive once the sun went down. A whole ecosystem emerging from burrows beneath rocks and yucca and creosote. Angel watched the tiny thermal markers of the desert's surviving inhabitants and wondered if the desert returned his gaze, if some skinny coyote looked up at the muffled thwop of Camel Corps gunships flying overhead and marveled at this charge of airborne humanity. An hour passed. "We're close," Reyes said, breaking the stillness. His voice was almost reverent. Angel leaned forward, searching. "There she is," Gupta said. A black ribbon of water, twisting through desert, cutting between ragged mountain ridges. Shining moonlight spilled across the waters in slicks of silver. The Colorado River. It wound like a serpent through the pale scapes of the desert. California hadn't put this stretch of river into a straw yet, but it would. All that evaporation, couldn't let the sun steal that forever. But for now, the river still flowed in the open, exposed to sky and the Guardies' solemn view. Angel peered down at the river, awed as always. The radio chatter of the Guardies ceased, all of them falling silent at the sight of so much water. Even much reduced by droughts and diversions, the Colorado River awakened reverent hungers. 7 million acre-feet a year, down from 16 million, but still, so much water, simply there on the land. No wonder Hindus worshipped rivers, Angel thought. In its prime, the Colorado River had run more than 1,000 miles, from the white snow Rockies down through the red rock canyons of Utah and onto the blue Pacific, tumbling fast and without obstruction, and wherever it touched, life. If a farmer could put a diversion on it, or a home builder could sink a well beside it, or a casino developer could throw a pump into it, a person could drink deep of possibility. A body could thrive in 115-degree heat. A city could blossom in a desert. The river was a blessing as sure as the Virgin Mother's. Angel wondered what the river had looked like back when it still ran free and fast. These days, the river ran low and sluggish, stoppered behind huge dams. Blue Mesa Dam, Flaming Gorge Dam, Morrow Point Dam, Soldier Creek Dam, Navajo Dam, Glen Canyon Dam, Hoover Dam, and more. And wherever dams held back the river and its tributaries, lakes formed, reflecting desert sky and sun, Lake Powell, Lake Mead, Lake Havasu. These days, Mexico never saw a drop of water hit its border, no matter how much it complained about the Colorado River Compact and the law of the river. Children down in the cartel states grew up and died thinking that the Colorado River was as much a myth as the chupacabra that Angel's old abuela had told him about. Hell, most of Utah and Colorado weren't allowed to touch the water that filled the canyon below Angel's chopper.
10 minutes to contact, Reyes announced. Any chance they'll fight?
Reyes shook his head.
Zoners don't have much to defend with. Still got most of their units deployed up in the Arctic.
That had been Case's doing, greasing a bunch of East Coast politicians who didn't care what the hell happened on this side of the Continental Divide. She'd gorged those pork barrel bastards on hookers and cocaine and vast sloshing oceans of super PAC cash. So when the Joint Chiefs discovered a desperate need to defend tar sands pipelines way up north, coincidentally, the only folks that could do the job were the desert rats of the Arizona National Guard. Angel remembered watching the news as they deployed, the relentless rah-rah of energy security from the feeds. He'd enjoyed watching all the journos beating the patriotism drums and getting their ratings up, making citizens feel like badass Americans again. The journos were good for that, at least. For a second,
Americans could still feel like big swinging dicks. Solidarity, baby. The Camel Corps' 24 choppers dropped into the river's canyon, skimming black waters. They wound along its serpentine length, hemmed in on either side by stony hills, sweeping up the liquid curves of the Colorado to the target. Angel was starting to grin, feeling the familiar rush of adrenaline that came when all bets were made and all anyone could do was find out what lay in the dealer's deck. He clutched the quartz injunctions to his chest. All those seals and hologram stamps, all that ritual of lawsuits and appeals, all leading to a moment when they could finally take the gloves off. Arizona would never know what hit them. He laughed. Times, they do change. Gupta, riding the belly gun, glanced over. What's that you saying? She was young, Angel realized. Young as he'd been when Case put him in the Guardies and got his state residence approved once and for all. Poor and desperate deportee, looking to find some way, any way, to stay on the right side of the border. How old are you? He asked. 12? She gave him a dirty look and brought her focus back to her targeting systems. 20, old man. Don't be cold, he pointed down at the Colorado. You're too young to remember how it used to be. Used to be that we all sat down with a bunch of lawyers and papers, bureaucrats with pocket protectors. He trailed off, remembering early days when he'd stood bodyguard behind Catherine Case as she went into meetings. Bald bureaucrat guys, city water managers, Bureau of Reclamation, Department of the Interior. All of them talking acre feet and reclamation guidelines and cooperation, wastewater efficiency, recycling, water banking, evaporation reduction and river covers, tamarisk and cottonwood and willow elimination. All of them trying to rearrange deck chairs on a big old Titanic. All of them playing the game by the rules, believing there was a way for everyone to get by. Pretending they could cooperate and share their way out of the situation if they just got real clever about the problem. And then California tore up the rulebook and chose a new game. Were you saying something? Gupta pressed. Nah, Angel shook his head. Games changed is all. Case used to play that old game pretty good. He grabbed his seat for support as they popped up over the canyon rim and bore down on their target. We do okay with this new game, too. Ahead, their objective glowed in the darkness, a whole complex standing alone in the desert. There it is. Lights started winking out. They know we're coming, Reyes said, and began issuing battle instructions. The choppers spread out, picking likely targets as they came into range. Their own chopper plunged lower, joined by a pair of support drones. Angel's military glass showed another cluster of choppers running ahead, opening up airspace. He gritted his teeth as they started dropping and jigging, keeping their movement random, waiting to see if the ground tried to light them up. Off on the far horizon, he could see the orange glow of Carver City. Houses and businesses bright and shining, a halo of urbanity blazing against the night sky. All those electric lights. All that AC. All that life. Gupta fired a couple rounds. Something lit up below, a fountain of flames. Their gunships swept over the leading edge of the pumping and water treatment facilities, pools and pipes running all over the place. Black Apaches settled on rooftops and parking lots, dropped to pavement, and belched forth troops. More gunships thudded down like giant dragonflies alighting. Rotor wash kicked up quartz sands, scouring Angel's face. Showtime, Reyes motioned at Angel. Angel checked his flak jacket a final time and snapped the chin strap of his helmet. Gupta watched, smiling. You want a gun, old man? Why? Angel asked as he jumped out. That's why I got you coming in with me. Guardies formed around him. Together they dashed for the plant's main doors. Floodlights were coming up, workers rushing out, knowing what was coming. Camel Corps had their rifles up and ready, keeping sights on the targets ahead. Amplified orders blasted from Gupta's comm.
Everyone on the ground! Down! Get down!
Civilians hit the deck. Angel jogged up to a huddled and terrified woman, waved his papers.
You got a Simon Yu in there somewhere?
He shouted over the shriek of the choppers. She was too scared to speak. Sort of pudgy white lady with brown hair. Angel grinned.
Hey, lady, I'm just serving papers.
Inside, she finally gasped.
Thanks.
Angel slapped her on the back.
Why don't you run all your co-workers out of here, in case things get hot?
He and the soldiers rammed through the treatment plant's doors, a wedge of weaponry with Angel striding at his heart. Civvies slapped themselves up against the walls as Camel Corps stampeded past.
Vegas in the house, Angel crowed. Grab your ankles, boys and girls.
Gupta's amplified orders drowned him out.
Clear out, all of you. You got 30 minutes to evacuate this facility. After that, you're obstructing.
Angel and his team hit the main control rooms. Flat-screen computers monitoring effluents, water quality, chemical inputs, pump efficiency, along with a whole pack of water quality engineers, looking like surprised gophers as they popped up from their workstations.
Where's me some supervisor?
Angel demanded.
I want me some Simon Yu.
A man straightened.
I'm you.
Slim and tanned, balding, comb over, scars of old acne on his cheeks. Angel tossed papers at him as Camel Corps spread out and secured the control room.
You're shut down.
You caught the papers clumsily.
The hell we are. This is on appeal.
Appeal all you want tomorrow, Angel said. Tonight you got an order to shut down. Check the signatures.
We're supplying 100,000 people. You can't just turn off their water.
Judges say we've got senior rights, Angel said. You should be glad we're letting you keep what you already got in your pipes. If your people are careful, they can live on buckets for a couple days till they clear out.
Yu was riffling through the papers.
But this ruling is a farce. We're getting a stay, and this is going to be overturned. This ruling, it barely exists. Tomorrow it's gone.
Knew you'd say something like that. Problem is, it's not tomorrow right now. It's today. And today the judges say you got to stop stealing the state of Nevada's water.
You're going to be liable, though, Yu sputtered.
He made a heroic effort to calm himself.
We both know how serious this is. Whatever happens to Carver City is on you. We have security cams. All of this is going to be public record. You can't want this to be on your head when judgments start coming down.
Angel decided he kind of liked the balding bureaucrat. Simon Yu was dedicated. Had the feel of one of those good government guys who got a job because he wanted to make the world a better place. Genuine old-school civil servant, genuinely dedicated to the old-school benefit of the people. And now, here the guy was, cajoling Angel, playing the let's be reasonable, don't be hasty game. Too bad it wasn't the game they were playing.
This is going to piss off a lot of powerful people, Yu was saying. You aren't going to get off. The feds aren't going to let something like this happen.
It was a bit like meeting a dinosaur, Angel decided. Kind of icy to see, sure, but really, how the hell had the man ever survived?
Powerful people?
Angel smiled gently. You cut a deal with California I'm not aware of? They own your water, and somehow I don't know? 'Cause from where we stand, you're pumping some crappy junior water right that you bought secondhand off a farmer in western Colorado, and you got no cards left to play. This is water that should have come to us a long time ago. Says so in those papers I just gave you.
Yu gave Angel a sullen glare.
Come on, Yu.
Angel lightly punched the man in the shoulder.
Don't look so down. We both been in this game long enough to know someone's got to lose.
Law of the river says senior rights gets it all. Junior rights?
Angel shrugged. Not so much.
Who did you pay off?
You asked.
Stevens? Arroyo?
Does it matter?
It's 100,000 people's lives.
Shouldn't have bet them on such crappy water rights then, Gupta commented from across the control room, where she was checking out the flashing lights of pump monitors. Angel hid a smirk as Yu shot her a dirty look.
The soldier's right, Yu. You got your notice there. We're giving you 25 more minutes to clear out, and after that I'm dropping some Hades and Hellfire on this place. So clear it out before we light it up.
You're going to blow us up?
A bunch of the soldiers laughed at that. Gupta said, You did see us come in with the helicopters, right?
I'm not leaving, Yu said coldly. You can kill me if you want. Let's see how that works out for you.
Angel sighed. I just knew you'd be stand up that way.
Before Yu could retort, Angel grabbed him and slammed him to the floor. He buried a knee in the bureaucrat's back, grabbed an arm, and twisted it.
You're destroying...
Yeah, I know.
Angel wrenched Yu's other hand behind his back and sip-cuffed him.
A whole fucking city. 100,000 lives. Plus somebody's golf course. But like you noticed, dead bodies do make things complicated. So we're taking your bald ass out of here. You can sue us tomorrow.
You can't do this, Yu shouted from where his face was mashed into the floor.
Angel knelt down beside the helpless man.
I feel like you're taking this personally, Simon. But it ain't that way. We're just cogs in a big old machine, right?
He jerked Yu upright. This is bigger than you and me. We're both just doing our jobs. He gave Yu a shove, propelling him through the doors. To Gupta, he called back.
Check the rest of the place and make sure it's cleared. I want this place on fire in 10.
Outside, Reyes was standing at the chopper door, waiting.
We've got zoners incoming, Reyes shouted.
Well, that ain't good. How long?
5 minutes.
Fucking hell.
Angel made a twirling motion with his finger.
Spin us up then. I got what I came for.
Chopper blades came alive, an angry shriek. Their whine drowned out Yu's next words. But his expression was enough for Angel to understand the man's hatred.
Don't take this personally, Angel shouted back. In another year, we'll hire you up in Vegas. You're too good to waste here. SNWA can use good people like you.
Angel tried to tug Yu into the chopper, but the man resisted. He was glaring at Angel, eyes squinting against the dust wash. Guardy choppers started lifting off. Locusts rising. Angel gave Yu another tug.
Time to go, old man.
The hell you say.
With sudden surprising strength, Yu tore free and bolted back toward his water treatment plant. Stumbling, hands still zip-cuffed behind his back, but running determinedly for the building from which the last of his people were fleeing.
Angel exchanged a pained look with Reyes.
Dedicated bastard. Right down to the end, the pencil pusher was dedicated.
We've got to go, Reyes shouted. If the zoners get their choppers up here, we'll end up in a firefight and the feds will be all up our asses then. There's some shit they won't put up with, and a state-to-state gun battle is definitely one of them. We need to clear out.
Angel looked back at Yu as he fled.
Just give me 1 minute.
30 seconds.
Angel gave Reyes a disgusted look and charged after Yu. All around him, choppers were lifting off, rising like leaves on hot desert winds. Angel pelted through the flying grit, squinting against sand sting. He caught Yu at the door to the treatment plant.
Well, you're stubborn. I'll give you that.
Let me go.
Instead, Angel flipped him hard onto the ground. The landing took Yu's breath away. And Angel took advantage of the man's paralysis to zip-cuff his ankles, too.
Leave me the fuck alone.
Normally I'd just cut you like a pig and be done with it, Angel grunted, as he hefted Yu onto his back in a fireman's carry.
But since we're doing this all above board in public, that's not on the table. But don't push me. Seriously.
He began lumbering for the sole remaining chopper. The last of Carver City's treatment plant workers were diving into their cars and speeding away from the pumping facility, kicking up plumes of dust. Rats jumping the sinking ship. Reyes was glaring at Angel.
Hurry the fuck up.
I'm here. Let's go already.
Angel dumped you into the chopper. They lifted off, with Angel riding the skid. He clawed his way inside. Gupta was back at her gun, already opening fire as Angel strapped in. Angel's military glass lit up with firing solutions. He peered out the open door as military intelligence software portioned out the water treatment plant, filtering towers, pumping engines, power supply, backup generators. Missiles spat from the chopper's tubes, arcs of fire, silent in the air and then explosively loud as they buried themselves in the guts of Carver City's water infrastructure. Flaming mushrooms boiled up into the night, bathing the desert orange, illuminating the black locust shapes of the hovering choppers as they launched more rounds. Simon Yu lay at Angel's feet, zip-cuffed and impotent to stop the destruction, watching as his world went up in mushroom clouds. In the flickering light of the explosions, Angel could make out tears on the man's face, water gushing from his eyes, as telling in its own way as a man's sweat. Simon Yu, mourning the place he'd tried so hard to save. Sucker had ice in his blood, for sure. Didn't look it, but the sucker had him some ice. Too bad it hadn't helped. It's the end of times, Angel thought as more missiles pummeled the water treatment plant. It's the goddamn end of times. And then on the heels of that thought, another followed, unbidden. Guess that makes me the devil.
Chapter 2
Lucy woke to the sound of rain, a benediction gently pattering. For the first time in more than a year, her body relaxed. The release of tension was so sudden that for a moment, she felt as if she were filled with helium. Weightless. All her sadness and horror sloughed off her frame like the skin of a snake, too confining and gritted and dry to contain her any longer, and she was rising. She was new and clean and lighter than air, and she sobbed with the release of it. And then she woke fully, and it wasn't rain caressing the windows of her home, but dust, and the weight of her life came crushing down upon her once again. She lay still in bed, trembling with the loss of the dream, blotting away tears. Sand slushed against the glass, a steady etching. The dream had seemed so real. The rain pouring down, the softness in the air, the smell of plants blossoming. Her clenched pores and the tight clays of the desert all opening wide, welcoming the gift. The land and her body absorbing the miracle of water that fell from the sky. God water, American settlers had once called it, as they invaded slowly across the prairies of the Midwest and then pressed into the arid lands beyond the Rocky Mountains. God water. Water that fell of its own volition, right out of the sky. In Lucy's dream, it had been as gentle as a kiss. Blessing and absolution, cascading from the heavens, and now it was gone. Her lips were cracked and broken. Lucy kicked off sweaty sheets and went to peer outside. The few streetlights that hadn't been shut out by gangs stood as dim moons struggling against a reddish haze. The storm was thickening even as she watched, the streetlights collapsing into blackness, leaving retina stains of imagined glows in their place. The light going out of the world. Lucy thought she'd read that somewhere. Some old Christian thing. The death of Jesus, maybe. The light going out. Forever. Jesus blows out,
and La Santa Muerte blows in.
Lucy went back to bed and stretched out on the mattress, listening as the winds whipped the night. Somewhere outside, a dog was howling for safety. A stray, maybe. It would be dead in the morning. Another victim of Big Daddy Drought. A whine from beneath her bed echoed the begging outside. Sunny, crouched and shivering, thanks to the changes in air pressure. Lucy crawled out of bed again and went to fill a dish with water from her urn. Unconsciously, she checked its level, knowing before she saw the numbers that she still had 20 gallons, yet unable to prevent herself from checking the little LED meter anyway, confirming the count she had in her own head. She crouched down beside the bed, pushed the dish toward the dog. Sunny regarded her from the deep shadows, miserable. He wouldn't come out to drink. If Lucy had been superstitious, she would have suspected that the ragged Australian shepherd knew something she didn't. That he sensed evil in the air. The devil's wings beating overhead, maybe. The Chinese believed that animals could sense earthquakes. Use them to predict disasters. The communists of old China had once evac'd 90,000 people from the city of Haichang before a major earthquake, sensing it hours ahead, saving lives because they trusted animals to know things that human beings did not. One of the biotechs at Taiyang International had told Lucy about it, used it to illustrate how China knew how to see the world clearly and planned ahead, and because of it, China was resilient in comparison to the broke-back version of America where he'd been stationed. When an animal spoke, you were supposed to pay attention. Sunny huddled beneath the bed, fur and skin twitching, giving off a low, continuous, miserable whine. "Come on out, boy." He wouldn't budge. "Come on. The storm's on the outside. It's not in here." Nothing. Lucy sat cross-legged on the tile, regarding Sunny. The tile was cool, at least. Why didn't she just sleep on the floor? What made her even bother with a bed or sheet in the summer? Or the spring or fall, for that matter. Lucy splayed herself belly down on the clay tile, letting it press against her bare skin. She reached under the bed to Sunny. "We're okay," she murmured, running her fingers through his fur. "Shh, shh, it's okay, we're okay." She tried to force herself to relax, but a nervous shiver of her own refused to stop rippling under her skin. A discomfited, ticking awareness. No wonder Sunny was under the bed. No matter how much Lucy tried to tell herself the dog was crazy, her own lizard brain believed the dog's warning. Something was outside. Something dark and hungry. And she couldn't shake the feeling that the horrific thing was turning its attention to her. To her and Sunny, and this safe little island of hunkered adobe shelter that she called home. Lucy got up and checked the deadbolts on the doors to the dust room. "You're being paranoid." Sunny whined again. "Shut up, boy." The sound of her own voice bothered her. She made another circuit of the house, checking to make sure all the windows were sealed. Startled at her own reflection in the kitchen window. "Didn't I close that?" She pulled the Guatemalan weave across the glass, half expecting a face to appear in the darkness beyond. It was superstitious and absurd to think that anyone could actually be out in the storm looking in at her, but now she went and pulled on jeans anyway, feeling better clothed. Feeling at least psychologically protected as she gave up on sleep for good. No way she was sleeping now. Not with this storm-induced anxiety running its fingers between her shoulder blades. Might as well work. Lucy opened her computer and scanned her fingerprints on the trackpad, keyed her passwords as the winds continued to lash her home. The house batteries were lower than she would have liked. They had a 20-year warranty, but Charlene was always telling her that was bullshit. Lucy just hoped the storm would pass by morning so she could sweep off the solar panels and get the charge back up. Sunny whined again.
Lucy ignored him and logged into her revenue trackers. She'd posted a news story with original art that Timo had shot. If she was honest, the pics really sold the story. A truck filled with belongings, mired to the hubs in dust, trying to get away from Phoenix and failing miserably. The latest in collapsed pornography. The story was kicking around the net, syndicating and collecting eyeballs and revenue, but Lucy was surprised it hadn't gotten the attention she hoped. She scanned the feeds, looking for reasons her eyeball share might have slipped. Something was happening over by the Colorado River. A firefight or a bombing. Hashtag Carver City. Hashtag Co River. Hashtag Black Helicopters. Bigger news organizations were already on it. Lucy pulled up video and got a water manager spitting invective about Las Vegas. She'd have pegged him as a lunatic, except for the wreckage and flames blazing behind him, lending credence to the idea that Las Vegas really had rolled in with its water knives and done some precipitous cutting. The balding man was ranting that he'd been abducted by Nevada guardies and then dumped in the desert to hike his way back to the wreckage of his own treatment plant.
"This was Catherine Case. She completely ignored that we're appealing. We have rights."
"Are you going to sue?"
"You're damn right we're going to sue. She's gone too far this time."
More sites were lighting up with the story. Arizona local stations and personalities beating the drums of regional anger, generating hits and ad revenue off the battlefield images as they inflamed local hatreds. More revenue would be flowing in as the comments blew up and people threw the story onto their social networks. Lucy flagged the story for her trackers, but with the storm and the distance, she'd already missed the window to take much credit or do anything except draft off the hits of other journos. She kicked the story into her own feeds, just to assure her readers that she was aware of Carver City's evisceration, and turned to her own primary sources, hunting for leads in the sloshing sea of social media, stories that she could get to first and claim as her own. Dozens of new comments. Hashtag Phoenix down the tubes. Supposed to leave again today, except for another damn storm. Hashtag depressed. Hashtag Phoenix down the tubes. How you know you're at the end? You're drinking your own piss and telling yourself it's spring water. Hashtag Phoenix down the tubes. Hashtag clear sack love. Score! We're going north. Hashtag BC lottery. Hashtag see you bitches. Choppers in the canyon. Anyone know who's out there? Hashtag co-river. Hashtag black helicopters. They're still outside my door. Where the fuck is the cavalry? At Phoenix PD. Don't use Route 66. Hashtag Cali Militia. Hashtag drone pack. Hashtag MM16. WTF. When did Sam's bar close? Hashtag I need a drink. Hashtag Phoenix down the tubes. Pick Phoenix Rising. Billboard stuccoed with clear sacks. LOL. Hashtag Phoenix down the tubes. Hashtag Phoenix Arts. Hashtag Phoenix Rising. She'd been tracking Phoenix residents, their hashtags and commentaries, for years. A proxy map for the city's implosion. Virtual echoes of a physical disaster. In her own mind, she'd imagined Phoenix as a sinkhole, sucking everything down, buildings, lives, streets, history, all of it tipping and spilling into the gaping maw of disaster. Sand, slump saguaros, subdivisions, all of it going down. And Lucy, circling the edge of the hole, documenting. Her critics said she was just another collapsed pornographer, and on her bad days, she agreed. Just another giorno hunting for salacious imagery, like the vultures who descended on Houston after a Cat 6, or the sensationalized imagery of a fallen Detroit being swallowed by nature. But on other days, Lucy had the feeling that she wasn't so much eroticizing a city's death as excavating a future as it yawned below them. As if she were saying, "This is us. This is how we all end. There's only one door out, and we all use it." When she'd first arrived in the city as a green reporter, it hadn't felt so personal. Back then, she'd make jokes about the zoners, enjoying the easy stories and micropayment deposits, making quick cash off voyeuristic enticements for click-through. Hashtag clickbait. Hashtag collapse porn. Hashtag Phoenix down the tubes.
The residents of Phoenix and its suburbs were the new Texans,
those Mary Perry fools. And Lucy and her colleagues from CNN and Xinhua and Kindle Post and Agence France-Presse and Google New York Times were more than happy to feed on the corpse. The country had watched Texas fall apart, so everyone knew how it worked. Phoenix was Austin, but bigger and badder and more total. Collapse 2.0. Denial, collapse, acceptance, refugees. Lucy was just there to watch the zoners hit the wall, up close and personal. Autopsy the corpse with a high-power microscope and a cold Dos Equis in her hand. Hashtag better them than us. But then she'd met a few of the zoners, set down roots in the city. She helped her friend Timo gut his house, ripping pipes and wires out of the walls like popping the bones out of a corpse. They'd pried out windows like scooping eyeballs, leaving the house staring blindly across the street at equally eyeless homes, and she'd written up the experience. A family home of three generations made valueless because the suburb's water had gone dry and Phoenix wouldn't allow a hookup. Hashtag collapse porn, for sure. Except now Lucy was one of the actors, right alongside Timo and his sister Amparo and her three-year-old daughter, who'd cried and cried as the adults destroyed the only house she'd ever known. Sunny whined again from beneath the bed. "It'll pass," Lucy said absently, then wondered if it was true. The weather people were saying they might set a record for dust storms. 65 recorded so far, and more on the way. But what if there were no limit to the storms? Meteorologists all talked as if there could be records, and record breakers, as if there were some pattern they could discern. Weather anchors used the word drought, but drought implied that drought could end. It was a passing event, not the status quo. But maybe they were destined for a single continuous storm. A permanent blight of dust and wildfire, smoke, and drought. And the only records broken would be for days where anyone could even see the sun. A news alert popped up, glowing on Lucy's screen. Her scanner came alive as well, police bands crackling. Something about it sounded wrong. It was up on her social feeds, too. Cops all over. At Hilton 6. Bet it's bodies. Hashtag Phoenix down the tubes. More backup was being called in. Not just some hooker or PV factory worker who had gotten raped and dumped in a dry swimming pool. Someone important. Someone even Phoenix PD couldn't ignore. A person of interest. With a sigh, Lucy gave one last envious look at Sunny, still burrowed under the bed, and shut down her computer. She might not be able to make it to Carver City, but this was too local to ignore, even with the storm. In the dust room, Lucy strapped on an REI filter mask and grit goggles. Desert Adventure Pro 2, a care package gift from her sister Anna the year before. She took a final breath of clean air, then plowed out into the storm with her camera wrapped securely in plastic. Sand blasted her skin raw as she ran toward the memory of her truck's location. She fumbled with its door handle, squinting in the darkness, and finally got it open, slammed it closed behind her, and sat hunched, feeling her heart pounding as wind shook the cab. Grit hissed against glass and metal. When she powered up the truck, dust motes swirled inside, a red veil before the glow of the instrument panel's LEDs. She revved the engine, trying to remember the last time she'd changed the filters on its intakes, hoping it wouldn't clog and die. She switched on storm lights and pulled out, bumping down the potholed street more by memory than sight. It was nearly impossible to drive, even with the big storm lights blazing low from the truck. The street ahead disappeared into a wall of roiling dust. She passed other vehicles pulled over, waiting it out. People wiser than she. Lucy drove slowly, inching along side streets, wondering why she bothered, knowing she couldn't get good